This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
The Biden administration has been publicly touting a COVID-19 booster rollout. But behind the scenes, regulators disagree over who should get the shot.
It really came down to a lot of differences of opinion in terms of the data, because this is data that's been evolving so quickly that has been an issue that's made kind of the decision making on this difficult.
And why Bitcoin prices took a tumble today. Plus, how police departments are trying to convince officers to get vaccinated. It's Friday, September 24th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. We've been reporting all week on Chinese property developer Evergrande, which is China's largest issuer of junk bonds, and concerns that the company could fold if it wasn't able to make payments on those debts. Well, people familiar with the matter say that global bondholders didn't receive the $83 million interest payment they were due by Thursday's deadline. Evergrande could still make the payments belatedly, and it has a 30-day grace period before bondholders can call a default. Evergrande didn't respond to a request for comment, but a mispayment would set the stage for what could be the largest ever dollar bond default by a company in Asia. We'll have more as the story unfolds at WSJ.com. Bitcoin prices fell today after China declared all cryptocurrency transactions to be illegal. The announcement by China's central bank reinforces their stance against what they see as rivals to their government-issued currency. Chinese regulators worry that cryptocurrencies' decentralized, anonymous transactions can facilitate money laundering and move capital out of the country. Today's declaration coincides with Beijing's development of their own state-backed digital currency, which would give the government new tools to monitor the economy and its people. President Biden has said he wants profitable corporations to pay their fair share in taxes. But under the latest tax legislation, some companies would still be able to pay nothing. According to the Democratic proposal approved this month by the House Ways and Means Committee, the top corporate tax rate would jump from 21% to 26.5%. But our reporter Richard Rubin says the bill doesn't address the reasons that profitable companies sometimes don't pay taxes.
The companies that aren't paying a lot of taxes or paying none are often doing things that the government has encouraged them to do by giving them tax breaks to do it. So, for example, that includes investing in equipment where you get a full and immediate deduction. It includes doing corporate research so that you get a tax credit for that. And yeah, I think what Democrats are doing is they're saying, look, we know there are some companies out there that don't pay taxes and are profitable, but we're not going to solve the equation for that. We're not going to fixate on that. We're going to address what we see as maybe bigger issues, and they're going to focus on trying to encourage companies to do things that Democrats want them to do, invest in solar power, invest in low-income housing, and they're not willing to give up those goals in order to fully address this idea that every profitable company has to pay something in taxes.
But a White House official says that the committee's bill does mark a step forward in Biden's effort to get companies to pay more. A New York State judge has ordered the Trump Organization to turn over documents subpoenaed by the state attorney general's office. For the past 2.5 years, the AG's office has been conducting a civil fraud investigation into whether the Trump Organization and former President Donald Trump improperly inflated the value of his assets in financial filings. The judge's order requires the Trump Organization to provide a report of what it's done to preserve, collect, and produce documents detailed in the Attorney General's subpoenas. And General Motors is cracking down on white-collar employees who have not complied with a corporate mandate to report their COVID-19 vaccination status. In an internal memo sent earlier this week to managers inside GM's engineering division and viewed by the Wall Street Journal, GM said that employees who don't report will receive a violation letter in their personnel file. After that, they could lose part of a company performance bonus. A GM spokeswoman confirmed the memo and said that most of the non-compliant employees have reported their status since it was sent. But it illustrates the hurdles companies are facing as they try to improve the immunity of their workforce. Speaking of COVID-19 vaccines, coming up, we'll talk about why there's been so much back and forth about boosters.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
As we told you this morning, the CDC is recommending booster shots of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for seniors and some older Americans with underlying medical conditions. But the director of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky, also endorsed boosters for younger Americans working in healthcare or at another job that puts them at higher risk of exposure to the virus. In doing so, Walensky went against the recommendations of the CDC's own advisory panel. It's the latest shift among federal health officials on the question of who should get a booster. So where does that leave the public? Joining us to lay all this out is our health policy reporter, Stephanie Armour. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Stephanie, let's start with the CDC. How unusual is it for the CDC director to go against the recommendation of the panel known as the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices?
Highly unusual. Generally, most of the time, they follow the guidance and recommendations of the advisory panel. So this really has a number of people talking today because it is really unusual. I wouldn't say that was necessarily unexpected, but it's very unusual.
What do we know about why Walensky made the endorsement over the advice of the panel?
The people that I've spoken to said that she really was, number one, convinced based on the data that it was essential for individuals who could potentially be in contact with a number of people with COVID. She believed the data showed the necessity for a booster. I also believe from the people I talked with that there was some desire to kind of keep the FDA and CDC in sync in terms of what they were authorizing and recommending, which this does do. But it really came down to a lot of differences of opinion in terms of the data, because this is data that's been evolving so quickly that has been an issue that's made kind of the decision-making on this difficult.
To that point, Stephanie, we've heard different views on boosters from different parts of the government, the CDC, the Food and Drug Administration, and the White House. Why have they reached different conclusions?
Again, a lot of it comes down to, once again, how you are looking at the data. Like, it's very clear from the data that's come out, especially from the Israeli data, as well as some data on Mayo Clinic, that individuals who are older, say 65 years and older, are better protected with the booster. Where it gets a little bit more difficult is when you're looking at younger people, say 20 and 30-year-olds. They still have very good protection from the vaccine. So the question is, are we trying to prevent all infections, breakthrough infections, which can lead to long COVID? Or are we trying to eliminate or protect people from the high risk, like hospitalization and death? And the thinking has been from some of the advisory groups that there's just not enough evidence to show that people who maybe are in their 30s or 40s who really are well protected necessarily need that additional protection of a booster. And there's also concerns about the global situation, the need to really focus on getting vaccines to people in lower income countries. So that's been one strong school of thought when looking at the data. Whereas others look at it and say, this is a clear benefit from the boosters, no matter what age you are, and people should have the choice as to whether they want to get a vaccine. Especially, this is a key point, parents who have young children who can't be vaccinated, they may be 30 or 40, and be well protected, but a breakthrough infection could potentially put their unvaccinated children more at risk.
All this must be very confusing to Americans trying to figure out when or if they should receive a booster shot. And there's also the question of whether Americans can mix or match vaccines. What do these latest developments possibly mean for Americans trying to figure out whether or not they should get a booster shot?
The data is still coming in on the mix and match. So we will be seeing that. We will also be soon seeing some more additional data on vaccine safety. What I have generally said is it's best to follow the recommendations that are coming out from the FDA and CDC. If you are 65 years of age and older, and it's been 6 months since you completed your primary series, you should get a booster. You know, if you are at high risk of severe COVID, if, for example, you have an underlying medical condition, this could be diabetes or obesity, you may want to consider getting a booster, as well as if you work in a hospital setting where you're in a lot of contact. So really, I think following what's coming out and adhering to what the FDA and CDC are recommending makes sense. And knowing that there's soon going to be more information and guidance for people who maybe got the Moderna vaccine or the J&J, that is also coming.
You mentioned that the CDC's guidance is pretty closely aligned with the FDA's. Does that mean we're moving toward a consensus on boosters, or are we still likely to see different views coming from within the government?
I would hesitate to say we're ever at a consensus because we still need to look at Moderna boosters. What are they going to do on that? J&J boosters. And then we also need to look at authorization of vaccine for younger people. And then do we do boosters for younger people? So this is going to continue to be something that comes up again and again. And I do think there's a risk of some confusion for the public. That's why I think the messaging that the administration does around this is going to be so essential.
Wall Street Journal health policy reporter Stephanie Armour. Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thanks so much.
And finally, many cities are now mandating that their police officers get vaccinated. But there's been pushback. Some officers are skeptical of the vaccine and don't want to be forced to get it. Our reporter Zusha Ellenson says police departments are doing all they can to persuade them because their jobs could be on the line.
So they've been holding free clinics, free vaccination clinics for officers. Some cities have been offering more time off to employees if they get the vaccine. But it seems to be the really big motivator are these deadlines, which are coming up in cities all over the country in October and November, and even some in September in places like Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Seattle, San Diego. They're saying if you don't get the vaccine by this time, you may get fired. And the unions are all negotiating whether that will or will not happen. But right now, the threat seems very real.
Some officers are filing lawsuits. Others are quitting their jobs or applying for exemptions. And that's what's news for this week. I'm Charlie Turner, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This week, Peter Granitz filled in hosting our AM edition of the podcast. We had help from Anthony Bansi, Kate Bullivant, Julie Chang, Sandra Kilhoff, Zoe Thomas, J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Paolo Bosanin, Jenny Eng, Chris Zinsley, and Kateri Yoakum. The show was produced by Trine Nuri and Sam Westren, who is leaving after today. We wish him all the best. Have a great weekend. We'll be back for you, as always, on Monday morning.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.